and we welcome you to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Our weekly mission to keep South Florida informed on local, state, and regional news and issues affecting our community with a panel of the area's top journalists. And on this special program this week, they are all members of our WLRN Miami Herald news team. First, we'll have on Gina Jordan, who is our Capitol reporter, does a terrific job from Tallahassee. Sammy Mack, who is our online editor and health reporter, will be on with us to discuss Medicaid and other health care issues. And Ariana Prothero, our transportation reporter, will be on to talk about the state's laws proposed against texting while driving and other transportation issues. And then Terrence Shepard, who is our very hardworking news editor and a longtime business journalist with the Miami Herald, will talk about the economy and jobs. First, though, up from Tallahassee is our state reporter, Gina Jordan. Welcome, Gina. Good to have you.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me.
So we'll begin with the governor. And yesterday, Rick Scott did pay a visit to the Miami Herald. And after meeting with the paper's editorial board, then gave us a wide-ranging interview. I asked him about his political transformation from a man who ran 3 years ago as a Tea Party Republican, adamantly against the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, and then he slashed billions from education after being elected to now being a governor, accepting federal health care and in favor of giving teachers across the board pay raises. Has he made a left turn? Here was his response.
You know, I lived growing up with my parents struggled to have jobs. My dad has car repossessed. I've had all those struggles in my life. I know that education system is very important to live the American dream. So my first year, I walked in with a $3.7 billion budget deficit. So I made the tough choices. Now we're making smart choices.
We made the tough choices. Now we're making smart choices. Gina, what did you think of that?
Yeah, well, you know, Phil, he came in as a businessman. He started slashing money, shrinking government. You know, he did what he had to do with that multi-billion dollar budget shortfall. Some would say he did it with a heavy hand, though. But now he's able to say, look, unemployment is down. We have a budget surplus. My administration's policies are working.
I also asked him if he had changed as a person or as a politician since he took office more than 2 years ago.
You know, you go to Tallahassee being an outsider, which I am, but you learn how to work with people up there. It's a different system. But look, the things I worked on my first session, I got done. My second session, I got done. I'm confident that the legislature will go along with me, the things I believe in this year, because they're the right things.
Yeah, before we began speaking for the interview, he told me how different it was running a company from running a state. He said, running a company, everybody's on the same page, and there's only a few different branches with the state. You've got all these different branches and all these different people. It certainly sounds like he's learned a little bit about how to be a politician. How has he changed, in your observation?
Well, when he started, he seemed to have sort of a negative view of the press. His communications people sort of shut out the reporters for a while, and he realized that that wasn't working. And so he has definitely done a big turnaround with this. He actually talks to reporters now, and it doesn't have to be scheduled. He will walk out and start talking to reporters. And he seems to have kind of shut down that my way or the highway mentality. He has reached out to the teachers union. That was a big deal after he really made them mad cutting funding. And, of course, now with the Medicaid expansion turnaround, it's sort of like he's giving in a little bit because he knows he really has no choice if he wants to be reelected.
And there was more bad polling news for the governor this week, a new survey of Floridians from Quinnipiac, and there was another one from Public Policy Polling as well. It showed him with a very low support. Just 32% in the Q poll think that Rick Scott deserves a second term, and he would now lose by a wide margin to former governor and now Democrat Charlie Crist. This 38% in this Quinnipiac poll approve of the job that he's doing. While most respondents don't like his job performance, they do like his major policy initiatives. His proposal to give every public school teacher across the board bonuses has 74% support, and 50% of voters, as opposed to 40 who don't, back his support for expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And I asked him about this as well.
The poll that matters is November 2014. And what Floridians are going to say is, did Governor Scott do what he said he was going to do? Is our economy better? It is. It's working. Is our education system better? It is. It's working.
So it's working. That was from the state of the state. Is there a lot of paying attention to the polls there? And we'll get to the lieutenant governor in just a moment. But what do you think?
Well, he's got to be somewhat frustrated that people don't like him, but they like his policies. And even though they like his policies, they don't want him to be reelected. So he's got to really turn around his public relations and explain to people, look, this is what I helped craft, and I can do more of this if you'll give me another chance.
That's Gina Jordan. She is our Tallahassee reporter, and the reason we bring this type of information and news to you is because we are funded by listeners like you. And if you like what you hear, we are urging you to pledge. You're going to find out how in just a moment. This is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. That's Gina Jordan in Tallahassee. We will continue after you make your pledge with more issues on our special program, All Staff Edition of the Florida Roundup, in just a moment. We welcome you back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN, and we thank you for all of your pledges. Please keep them coming to 866-247-9576 or WLRNradio.org and make them in the name of the Florida Roundup. And by the way, we have an online conversation that takes place primarily on Twitter. It's at call sign WLRN, and all of our journalists are on Twitter as well. I'm at Phil Latzman. I know Gina Jordan, who's with us from Tallahassee, she's at Hear My Thought, one of the more unique Twitter handles. Gina, as we continue with you talking about state issues, recently a state and federal investigation into internet cafes revealed that one of them posing as a veterans charity fronting illegal gambling operations as allied veterans. It yielded dozens of arrests, led to the resignation of Florida's Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll. Before we get into the issue of the internet cafes, what's the inside line in Tallahassee on who might next be the next Lieutenant Governor?
Well, a lot of names are being floated about. Of course, no one is stepping forward to say, me, I want to be the Lieutenant Governor. And the governor has said he will not replace Jennifer Carroll until the legislative session ends in early May. But just a few of the names that have come up, Speaker Will Weatherford, Miami Senator Anna Terry Flores.
That's my choice. That's my prediction, at least. Not my choice, my prediction.
Yeah, I think that she has a good shot. Speaker Weatherford has said, oh, I like being Speaker. Also, Raquel Regalado, that Miami-Dade School Board member and daughter of Miami's mayor, she has been named as a possible candidate, but mm-hmm. of course she was in support of Democrat Alex Sink, who ran against Governor Scott back in 2010, so that's questionable, I guess.
Yeah, I spoke with her a few weeks ago before all this happened, and her profile's really been raised up lately, and she's very critical of the parent trigger law and a lot of the education legislation that's taking place in Tallahassee. It'd be interesting to see if she's considered, and certainly putting her name out there for a statewide audience. Now, the issue with internet cafes, the state acting very quickly, it appears, now to ban those internet cafes. Can you give us the latest on what's going on in the wake of this scandal?
Well, a little over an hour ago, the Florida House voted to ban internet cafes. So it's done in the House. Now it's up to the Senate, and that is moving quickly through the Senate as well. So the governor may very well sign that bill very soon.
And this was something that was not on the radar before the session started, right?
It really wasn't. It had been an issue last year, but because of this sort of moratorium on gambling policy, it really wasn't going to come up, I don't think, until this happened with Jennifer Carroll.
Moving on, Gina, to gun control, and I asked the governor this week about gun control laws. All he said to me was that he was not in favor of changing any of them, saying he believes in the Second Amendment, although there is a bill that the NRA is backing that might do a couple of things to make sure that the most mentally ill do not get guns. Tell us about what's going on in Tallahassee as far as this bill.
This bill has passed one committee so far in the House, and it does have a chance in that NRA lobbyist Marion Hammer supports it, and she supports it because it would help keep guns away from people who are mentally unstable. It sort of closes a loophole that would keep somebody who has maybe been Baker-acted and has been referred for treatment, it would keep them from buying a gun. And she says that that's a good thing, and she also likes it because it doesn't keep guns away from your sane, law-abiding citizens. So just the fact that she supports it means it does actually have a shot.
And how many people could this affect? I mean, how many people would actually fit into this this category? And I heard there was a judge who supports it, but says usually mentally ill are victims, not perpetrators, and that the guns are used for suicides.
Yeah, that's just it. If you look at the analysis done by these this House committee, it really doesn't say how many people would be impacted. And like you said, that judge says that really mentally ill people who buy guns usually tend to harm themselves and not others. So right now there's just no clear picture as to how many people this could affect.
Continuing with our all-staff edition of the Florida Roundup, starting with Gina Jordan in Tallahassee, our state reporter. And education now, Gina, across-the-board teacher bonuses is the governor's priority as part of a renewed focus on education policy.
As you know, what I care about is a $2,500 pay raise for all of our classroom teachers. They've done a great job. We're now number six in education quality, according to Education Week in the country, our school system is. Our teachers are the most effective teachers in the country, according to the National Council of Teacher Quality. And if you look at international surveys of our students, our fourth graders are number two in the world in reading.
So the governor says teachers deserve this, this what would be a one-time bonus of $2,500. Merit pay and all that stuff was talked about as the, rating teachers. This was all the rage of in the past. And now it's just give bonuses across the board because they deserve it. But how has his education policy evolved?
Well, the governor's education policy has evolved in that when he took office, he cut more than $1 billion out of education funding, and he really took a hard line, really sort of against the teachers' union. He really pushed for school choice. Since then, though, he has extended the olive branch to the Florida Education Association. He is now proposing that we offer these raises to teachers. The only issue with what he's proposing is that, and Speaker Will Weatherford was talking about this yesterday, he said that the legislature cannot tell local districts how to spend that money. So the legislature can give the districts the money, and then the districts will have to decide through collective bargaining with the teachers union who gets that money and whether it's an across-the-board raise or how they'll pay it out.
And the Senate says they'll support this if it's tied to performance. What about the House, and what about the idea of performance tied to this pay? Would that be what they're going to go for rather than just across-the-board bonuses?
Well, I think that's an option, but again, I think that the Senate is probably looking at it the same way the House is, in that they know that they can't make the districts do anything in particular with that money as far as giving teacher raises. So I think that the Senate, for now, is looking at it as saying, okay, sure, let's make this about performance pay. But that's subject to change. Over the next week, we'll see a firmer idea of what that budget will look like. And as Speaker Weatherford said, they are all for giving them this money, but the question will probably be left up to the districts as far as how it is distributed.
Gina Jordan, she's our reporter in Tallahassee. We look forward to hearing the reports. You and Rick Stone is also up there covering the session 2013 for us and doing a wonderful job. Thank you, Gina. Good to have you.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, and if you like our state coverage, please don't forget to pledge in the name of the Florida Roundup and all the state and local coverage at 866-247-9576 or WLRNradio.org. Moving on now to health insurance, and we are joined by the best health reporter in the business on the radio here in South Florida and really just about anywhere, Sammy Mack, who knows her stuff.
Thanks, Phil.
Welcome back, Sammy Mack.
Thank you.
And I love saying your name. The governor has also stuck his neck out, of course, on federal Medicaid expansion after he was vehemently opposed to Obamacare. By the way, Sammy is also an editor for online and does all kinds of great things for us at WLRN Miami Herald News. So the governor now supports this when it comes to Medicaid and making sure over 1 million uninsured residents have health care coverage under the federal program. And I spoke with him about his change of heart yesterday.
I believe there's a better way of making sure that all citizens have access to quality health care than the president's law, but it passed. The Supreme Court upheld it. Mitt Romney lost the presidential race, and he was going to repeal it. So it's a law of the land. I can't, in good conscience, say, well, we all pay the taxes for the president's health care law, and we're going to pay 100% of it. I can't, in good conscience, say for those that don't have access to health care that they're not going to get it.
Wow. Could we have ever imagined Governor Rick Scott saying this two, 3 years ago?
No. I mean, the flat answer is no. Florida led the Supreme Court challenge against the Affordable Care Act. And specifically what Florida did is it fought this piece that was Medicaid expansion. The rest of the country was really concerned with requiring people to have health insurance. But Florida also had this piece where they said it's so much money that we can't say no to it. It's coercion. You have to strike this piece down. It was the one part of the Supreme Court decision that came back where the justices said that this is something that has to be an option. You can't require states to do it. So that was Florida's one big victory with that fight at the Supreme Court level. And then we find out that suddenly Governor Rick Scott is, in fact, open to having Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, and the question is, now that he's had this epiphany, if you will, what happens now? Because his Republican colleagues in the House and Senate, not so thrilled about this, and we've already seen votes in the House and the Senate against Medicaid expansion. So how do they find an alternative to this?
Right. Well, Florida has a history of going back to the feds and saying, we have an idea for how to do this that's a little bit better than yours, we think. Can we do it? And then getting permission from the feds to change things around. So that is not entirely a surprise. What's happened now is Republicans in the House and Senate do not want to take Medicaid the way the Affordable Care Act would give it to the state. So what they are saying is, if we are going to do this, we want to do it our way. Not surprising. So State Senator Joe Negron proposed an alternative, which is based on Florida's kid care model, mm-hmm. that would be sort of a sliding scale model that would still be funded partially by the feds, that would open up health insurance through this program to people who make 138% of the poverty level or less, which is, I think, like $15,000 for an individual, or I think it's around $26,000 for a family of three. Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, when talking about people here, more than a million people in Florida waiting to find out, because they're uninsured, waiting to find out how they'll be covered under the Medicaid plan.
Right, and that would make them eligible. It doesn't immediately enroll them in it. So that's part of the calculations when the state tries to figure out how much this is going to cost. Some estimates assume that everyone's just going to run out and sign up for it. We know that that's probably not the case, because right now there are people who are already eligible for Medicaid who aren't signed up for it. So it's a little bit of a question just how many people and how soon that'll be. But that's the plan that they would like to see happen.
Now, how are public hospitals and employers that have to deal with this planning for this eventuality of federal health care?
Yeah, they are all wringing their hands. The public hospitals in particular are really concerned with whether or not Florida is going to expand Medicaid in one form or another, or expand health insurance to this population, because right now they end up spending a lot of money on these people who come in uninsured, and
they would have the most to gain.
They would have the most to gain with this. This would cover that population for them. And they, in fact, were really behind the Affordable Care Act because they saw, oh, great, this group of people will suddenly have some insurance. It's not as much as private insurance, but for them, it would be a boon. And that's part of why public hospitals signed on to it and supported it. And so when Florida said absolutely not in the beginning, that made them really nervous.
And what about employers? What do they need to know? And what does everybody need to know about these changes that will take effect eventually?
Well, the thing to know is that employers who have 50 people or more are going to be required to offer some sort of substantive benefits or be taxed for not offering them. And there's all sorts of benchmarks about what real, you know, good benefits are. The state's going to have to define all of that before October. There's going to be a health insurance exchange that comes from the feds in
October.
That's
in October, right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a lot of that is being defined in the interim. And so there are a lot of open questions. But for the average person, if you're being insured through an employer, that's probably not going to change. Employers offer benefits for that reason. So there's a lot of unknowns at the moment.
All right. And you will cover the unknowns and the known unknowns and all that other stuff as you continue to report healthcare and Sammy Mack. What's your Twitter handle, by the way?
It's at Sammy Mack.
At Sammy Mack. And it's very easy. Just
S-A-M-M-Y-M-A-C-K. Yeah.
Anyway. And if you like what you just heard there from our expert on healthcare, please pledge in the name of WLRN Miami Herald News. Thank you, Sammy Mack. And you'll find out how to do that in just a moment. You're listening to the Florida Roundup, and we're back at our special all-staff edition in just a moment. And I'm Phil Latzman. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Keep those pledges coming. We do appreciate them at 866-247-9576 or at WLRNradio.org if you enjoy this program. Let us know. Moving on now, and we've been continuing talking about state issues, and an interview yesterday with Florida's Governor Rick Scott. We've been playing you some of those clips. And we're moving on now to some transportation issues. We're joined by a very hardworking young lady who has been a part of our staff for a couple of years and has taken on transportation taking it by the bull by the horns here when it comes to covering the lack of transportation in many cases here in South Florida. Ariana Prothero. Hi, Ari. Welcome.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for having me.
So now, and this has been a discussion, we kind of set this off in January talking about texting while driving, and then we've heard from a senator in Venice called Nancy Dietert, who's been trying to introduce a bill year after year banning texting while driving in the state.
Yeah, this is the fourth year in a row.
Fourth year in a row. So we have this bill now, which makes texting while driving illegal as a secondary offense in Florida, making progress in the Florida legislature. Now, I asked Governor Scott yesterday if he would sign the bill if it passed.
I don't know. I'm not sure what the legislature is going to do, but I'm a father, and I know the risk of texting. I now have one grandson. I'm going to have two more grandsons this year. So it's clearly an issue that I'm hopeful the legislature will do the right thing.
So not much of a commitment there, but does sound like he'd be sympathetic to possibly signing it, receptive to signing the bill. What are the chances this year for this thing?
Well, I mean, it's looking better because, well, there's a House version, and it really seems like this is gaining traction among more and more legislators and lawmakers every year. This bill, like you mentioned, it would basically make it a secondary offense, which means that you can only be ticketed for texting or emailing while you're driving if you've already been pulled over for something else first. Some people are not happy with this being a secondary offense. They don't think it's strong enough. People like Steve Ogello. Steve's daughter died in a car crash in 2008, and he's been advocating for a distracted driving bill or a texting ban bill ever since.
SB 52 is a very weak bill. I mean, it's a $30 fine on your first offense. And I've told them, stood up in front of the Senate committee and told them, it should be a $1,000 fine on your first offense and lose your license permanently on your second offense. But that's never going to happen, not in this state.
And there are a lot of people that feel that way, that a primary offense would just be too hard to pass, and they're going to try to pass it with a secondary offense.
Well, that's
first.
What happened with the seatbelt law. It was a secondary offense for a very long time. Then it became a primary offense if the people in the passengers in the car were unseatbelted. You could pull over for that.
Exactly.
But then they made it a primary offense, and I think everybody started snapping on their seatbelts. But what you're saying is this is the first stage. It's an entree, if you will, until, you know, an appetizer before the entree, and they get the bill passed to make it a primary offense.
Right. The lawmakers I talked to and the supporters I talked to basically said primary offense is kind of a hard pill to swallow the first time around, so they're going to break it into two pills.
And what does the general public tell you about this? I mean, you've done a lot of reporting on this in the last couple of months. What are they telling you?
Well, I have spoken to a lot of people about this, and it's interesting. Everyone seems to think it's dangerous, and a lot of people support the bill. Last year, the Miami Herald, the Tampa Bay Times, and Bay News 9 polled about 800 registered Florida voters, and 71% said that they wanted a ban on texting and driving. But still, people text and drive. And I think a recent AAA study really highlights this issue. It found that over 90% of respondents who they surveyed say that they see other people texting or reading emails on the phone as a danger to their personal safety when they're driving. But on the other hand, more than two-thirds of respondents also admitted to texting or reading an email while they drove. You know, it doesn't take a math whiz to see that there's got to be some overlap between those two percentages.
Now, we've talked a lot about texting while driving. You cover a whole lot of other transportation issues because you're, as you've said, are amazed that there are not more transportation, public transportation options for people here in South Florida.
Yeah, that is a critique that you hear a lot. At least I hear a lot as I'm reporting that a lot of people wish that there was better public transportation
and
in the region.
Better infrastructure as well, although we read about every a lot now about new bridges and issues with not specifically one, but there are some infrastructure issues that need to be dealt with.
Yeah, there's been, you mentioned bridges, and there's been a couple of bridges in South Florida that have been in the news lately, specifically Bearcut Bridge, which connects Key Biscayne to Virginia Key, which connects to the Miami mainland. And that had to be partially closed in January because of corrosion. And then you have the Flagler Memorial Bridge, which connects Palm Beach to the mainland to West Palm. And it's going to be partially closed because it was basically sinking. And, you know, the issue we're seeing here is what we're seeing across the country is that these bridges, the infrastructure, it's getting older. Bearcut was built in 1944, I believe, and Flagler in the late 30s.
Ariana Prothero, she's our transportation reporter and so much more, really, behind the scenes. Give us your Twitter address so people can communicate with you and send you stuff on Twitter.
It's a little difficult. It's at Ariana Prothero. That's ARIANNAPROTHERO, if you can get that.
I think they can. Ari, thanks so much. Great to have you here. Now, we're going to shift chairs and bring in our our editor, who is in charge of our news and other issues as far as editing stories go on the air and go online. His name is Terrence Shepard, and I've known this gentleman for a very long time because he was a business editor at the Miami Herald for quite some time. Terrence, good to have you.
Hello, Phil. Thank you very much.
You were actually a Roundup guest before you even became an editor at WLRN.
Long time ago.
Yes, and we've been on the air for almost 4 years. You have a great grasp of the economy and business, and this week we heard that Florida's unemployment rate dipped to its lowest level in more than 4 years. In January, it fell to 7.8%, according to the state's Department of Economic Opportunity. This week, the Florida is a seasonally adjusted unemployment rate has not been that low since November of 2008, when it also stood at 7.8%. It's the first time that Florida's jobless rate fell below the national rate in 5 years. The unemployment rate nationally is at 7.9, in Florida at 7.8. Here's Republican Governor Rick Scott, of course, ran on jobs, 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 and he staked his political future on that. He was quick to applaud the report when he spoke to us yesterday, but said the job of creating jobs wasn't finished.
We've got to continue to make sure everybody that wants a job can have one. I mean, as you know, we've had great progress going from losing 800,000 jobs in 4 years to gaining almost 300,000 jobs in 2 years. So that's a real positive. Unemployment's the second biggest drop in the country of any state in the country. So that's a real positive. But we have to keep it up. I've eliminated 2,300 regulations, streamlined the permitting process, attracted businesses. People are moving here. Home prices are up. Home sales are up, 5-year high in consumer confidence, 5-year low on houses on the market, but we have to keep working at it. I want every Floridian who wants a job to have one.
So Governor Scott wants to, I guess, take credit for it, and this was a lot of last year during the presidential campaign, who gets credit for it, President Obama or Governor Scott, but how much credit does the governor get, Terrence?
Well, it's interesting you would say that, because Scott and Obama are sort of linked at the hip when it comes to the economy. And somehow Florida's economy has somewhat mirrored the nation's economy. So you've seen a gradual improvement. And I'm not sure exactly where this comes from. Scott has said he's created an atmosphere that's pro-business. He's created and said the things that business people want to hear that will make them want to hire people, expand business here in Florida.
He's also talked about one of his priorities being eliminating the manufacturing tax. In fact, that was the two things he talked about in the state of state address as his priorities were the education with the teacher bonuses and eliminating this tax. What's that all about?
So he wants to eliminate all sales taxes on new manufacturing purchases so the companies can buy all sorts of equipment and not pay that sales tax, and that's worth $150 million. There are no studies that say that this would actually create jobs. In other words, companies may or may not take this savings and hire more people. And so, but it sounds good.
And could this really, the foreclosure situation, I think, is what we have to talk about. They're going back up. The percentage of foreclosure, the foreclosure rate is going back up, especially here in Florida. I think Florida is now number one again in that dubious category. But is that hampering the real estate market's improvement? And we still see interest rates are low right now.
Well, the reason the foreclosure is going up because we had a basic standstill during the robo-signing scandal. And so now we're just seeing the market catch up to its,
the
natural rate of foreclosures. So these are gradually being eased in the market. That's keeping prices down somewhat. But for existing homes and on the higher end, you're seeing the market stronger than ever.
And locally, the issue that's dominating the discussion locally has been the Dolphins stadium, and the Dolphins announced yesterday that the team is not going to use public funding for stadium upgrades unless the NFL awards South Florida the Super Bowl in 2016 or 2017. So they're starting to change their tact a little bit here, and doesn't sound like they're sure that they're going to get the Super Bowl if this thing gets approved.
Well, it's a smart marketing move on the Dolphins' part. Because they can say, yes, we're not going to take it unless we get the Super Bowl. And Mayor Jimenez has said that he doesn't want to put anything to the voters unless we know for sure we're going to get the Super Bowl. And of course, all of this is based upon these sometimes fantastical estimates of the economic benefits of getting Super Bowls. You improve the stadium, you'll get Super Bowls, you get the BCS championships, you'll get the Olympics. So it's sort of a crazy estimate of the benefits of these sports stadiums.
And that is something that continues to confound people as far as how they get that information. But there is legislation in Tallahassee allowing the Dolphins to get public money, and it's been making its way through committees in the state legislature right now.
But nothing has actually done. So you've got a two-track deal. You've got the legislature, which has to sign off on a tax rebate that the Dolphins pay the state. You've also got the county, which will be kicking in some of the funds to construct the stadium. So it's a two-track deal. It's quite complicated. I don't know what's going to happen.
So we do know this, that the Marlins stadium deal looms all over the Dolphins stadium negotiations. And on opening day for Major League Baseball, we're going to be taking your calls for a two-hour special on the legacy of the Marlins stadium already after 1 year. And that's a Monday, April 1st, not an April Fool's joke, but it is from 11 to 1 p.m. to share your opinion on the Marlins ballpark. Terrence Shepard, who is our news editor, longtime business journalist. Sir, how do we get you on Twitter? Your name, spell your name out for us.
At Terrence Shepard, TerenceShepherd.
It's good to have you on the air, Terrence. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Phil.
And that does it for the Florida Roundup this Friday, March 29th, 2013. Did I say 29th? I meant 22nd. If you missed any of the show, we can listen back to it on these airwaves tomorrow morning. But we also posted at WLRN.org. It's produced by Alicia Zuckerman. Elaine Chan, our associate producer. Our public insight network analyst, Steph Farrow. Social media editor is Danny Rivero. Executive producer for WLRN, Peter J. Meritz. For WLRN Miami Herald News, Dan Gretsch. Our technical supervisor, Paul Leary. South Florida Arts Beats next. If you like what you hear, please pledge. You'll hear how to do that in just a moment. Until next week, thanks to all of our WLRN Miami Herald News staffers. I'm Phil Latzman, saying stay informed, South Florida.